What a story. What a tale. You cannot read this story without it raising some questions in your mind. In fact, when we talked about our worship service in our staff meeting earlier this week, we must have spent 45 minutes or so just talking about it, all the questions that flooded into our minds as we pondered this, that after 7 years of anxiously waiting and planning to marry the love of his life, Jacob finally gets to marry the love of his life. But when he wakes up the next morning, he finds that he's been sleeping with someone totally different than he thought that he had married. How in the world could he have done something like that? How in the world could something like that have happened? How was it possible that Jacob could have been so fooled? You would think that somewhere during that night in that tent, it would have dawned on him that this woman that he was embracing was not the woman that he thought he had married. And so the question was, is why wasn't he able to tell who he was making love with? Why? Were there no candles? Were there no words spoken? Were Leah and Rachel kind of the same build? You know, kind of the same shape and size, so it was hard to tell them apart in the desert night? Did Leah dress up in Rachel's clothes and wear Rachel's perfume? Did Leah ever take off that veil during the night? I mean, you'd think she did or would. Maybe Jacob was wasted. Maybe he wasn't in full control of his faculties. As this passage reads in verse 22, Laban threw this big party for all the men of the town, and a big feast, and the Hebrew word mishteh means to drink. And so Laban provided food and drink, and I'm sure Jacob ate his fill and he drank his fill. And so maybe he was stoned when he wandered into the tent reaching for Rachel. Here he was intoxicated by wine and by love. Did Jacob know the sisters at all? Or was he so self-involved that he couldn't distinguish the one from the other? However you answer that question, along with a bunch of other questions like, was Leah up to this? I mean, did she... was she forced into this, or was she part of the game? Lots of questions like this. However you answer the questions, there's one thing. What is known? That when the morning light dawned in that desert tent, the Bible says, and behold, there was Leah. And one can only imagine how utterly aghast Jacob might have been. Is this really so? As he looks over in the growing light, he looks over and he sees the face of Leah. Did his eyes now deceive him as his hands did in the darkness of the night before? He couldn't believe his eyes. But maybe it's not so hard for us to believe, given some of the ironies in the story of Jacob and his family as we are studying them together. Perhaps we shouldn't be surprised, because it was just a few years earlier that Jacob had usurped the birthright from his brother by tricking his blind father in a tent. Now in the darkness of his tent, Leah's face is covered with a veil, just like Jacob's hands and neck were covered with sheepskin, so his father, feeling his arms, might think it was Esau. And so in essence, Jacob was as blind as his father. Just as Jacob convinced Isaac that he was the firstborn child, so Laban substitutes his firstborn for Jacob's wife. Just as Jacob stole the blessing because Isaac's eyes were weak, so weak-eyed Leah becomes his first wife. What an irony. And what a message that tells us that so often in life, we reap what we sow. Like his father Isaac, Jacob was blind to the character and the schemes and the manipulations of others. The irony is underscored by the fact that if this was filmed in the 50s, you could probably see Leah decked out in glasses that had Coke bottled lenses. That's what Leah would look like. Her eyes were weak, but as the story goes on, Jacob's eyes are weaker. And how fitting that the two should wind up together. Jacob is too blind to his physical desires that he's not even able to tell who he's making love to. And one can only imagine him groping in the darkness like his father Isaac once did. No doubt, Jacob had it all planned. Jacob had it all figured out. He was going to marry this love of his life, and he was going to have a happy monogamous marriage like his parents did. But from this day on, his life was filled with sorrow and incredible pain. Waking up to reality. It happens all the time. We think we see clearly, but then that moment comes. We think we see clearly. We think we know what we want. We think we know what we're reaching for. We think we know what we're doing. But that moment comes, that shattering moment comes in our lives when what we thought we saw was not what we saw, was what we thought it was at all, but something totally different. And it happens all the time. It happens with marriage. How many times as a pastor through the years have I had someone tell me, I knew the next day that I had made a mistake. I had known within a year that this person that I had married was not the person I thought I was getting. And even after many years, some of us can look back and say, whoa, I'm not sure. I didn't know that this is what I was getting myself into. It can happen with a business venture. Everything can look so rosy. Everything can look so great. Everything can look as if it's moving along in a wonderful way. But then it turns out sour, totally the exact opposite of what we thought it was. Maybe it's something that we're purchasing, something that we're going to do for a recreational event, some kind of an experience that we have, or some relationship with someone. It happens all the time. We wake up to reality where we realize that what we thought we were seeing is not what was there at all. There is this underlying theme in this passage this morning, the theme of blindness and being deceived. And so I asked the question, I've asked myself all week long, and a couple weeks ago as I was planning this particular message, what made Jacob so blind? What made Jacob so vulnerable? That on this night that he had planned to be the greatest experience in his life, the fulfillment of his dreams, could wind up so heartbreaking and so shattering. How is it that he could get caught in such a honey trap that would literally cost him 20 years of his life? And then for the rest of his life, until he died, there would only be pain and sorrow and dysfunction in his family and in his marriage, in his home. First, I want us to see that there is the power of love, the power of feeling, and the power of some consuming desire to blind us. We can be blinded by love, we can be blinded by feelings, we can be blinded by some consuming desire. You read this story, it's a classic boy meets girl. If we had started in verse 1 of chapter 29, we would have gotten this picture of Jacob showing up at this well. He's been traveling. He's been weary. He's wondering how well life is going to go. And he shows up, and there's these shepherds. Several flocks have gathered together at this well, and some shepherd boys. And he begins asking them if they know Laban. And they say, oh, yeah, he's well. Things are fine. And, oh, by the way, this is his daughter, Rachel, coming down with Laban's sheep. And from the moment that Jacob lays eyes on Rachel, he's gone. It's love at first sight. He falls head over heels for this gal. And you read it there in the early verses of this particular chapter. The first thing he starts to do is to get rid of all those shepherds. He asked them, what are you doing? It's the middle of the afternoon. Why are you gathered here? There's plenty of time yet to feed these sheep. He's wanting to get rid of these guys and all their flocks so that he can spend some time with this girl. And we find that he immediately jumps up, he runs over to the well, and with a great show of masculine bravado, he moves this big stone out of the way single-handedly and waters her sheep. You see, he wants to do something for her. And then he grabs her and kisses her. You see, here's a man who's being pulled away by his emotions and the sparkle in this young girl's eyes. And then he weeps out loud. Joy that he had found such an incredible place. Jacob's love for Rachel blinds him to time, blinds him to work, blinds him to the customs of his uncle's country. You see it there in Genesis 29, verse 20. He worked 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed but a few days for him because he loved her so much. And how often are we blinded by our feelings, blinded by love, blinded by some consuming desire that is pressing on our lives? Somebody handed me this book last week or the week before, by Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Maybe some of you have heard some of her radio programs or read her book, 10 Stupid Things Women Do to Mess Up Their Lives. Anyway, here's another book she's written. How could you do that? That's a good title for a book. How could you do that? That's what we're asking about Jacob this morning, right? How could he do that? How could this happen? And so right here at the beginning in chapter 1, she says one of the number one responses that she gets from people that call in to her show and write to her letters and so forth is something that goes like this. Yeah, I know, but. And then, so in other words, they're saying, yeah, what you're saying about morals and ethics and values is true. Yeah, I know all that, but. And then they go on to say, but I was unhappy, or I was confused, or I was frightened, or I was in love, or I was scared to take the risk, or uncomfortable, or feeling lonely, or feeling needy, or feeling anxious. And then she puts this little parenthesis here. She says, by the way, by using the word feeling, most people think they are now on sacred ground, since pop psychology has elevated feelings from information to irresistible force. And then she says, you know, some are saying I'm carried away, or I've been vulnerable, I've been a victim, or whatever. And so it's a part of reality, it's part of our life. We wake up to reality many times because we have been blinded by some relationship that we're in. We're blinded by our feelings, our emptiness, what we are longing to have filled, or some consuming passion to do something or to accomplish something or be something. And with that goes our tendency to look on the surface and not dig deeper into moral, spiritual issues. You see, Genesis tells us there in verse 17, Leah's eyes were delicate or weak, but Rachel was beautiful in form and appearance. You see, Rachel is stunning. Rachel is shapely. Rachel is absolutely beautiful. Great figure, dancing eyes, she's alive. But Leah, oh, she's got those glasses on with Coke bottle lenses in them. And she's got a homely look to her. Jacob is smitten with Rachel and probably hardly even notices Leah. Perhaps Jacob is so caught up with Rachel's physical presence and how Rachel looks that he never really takes the time to get to know her personally and what she was like as a person. You see, surface beauty is often deceptive. And we, like Jacob, are frequently enticed by what our eyes see and what our hearts feel in response to that, as opposed to what our minds and our souls can appreciate. We, too, are taken in by surface traits and rarely even probe to deeper levels. Our society puts heavy stock in appearances and what's on the surface. It puts focus on legs and muscles and tone of skin and the smell of perfume and a suntan and the glow of one's hair and apparel and fashions and makeup. But it's not just one's physical looks or one's physical expression that is so often focused on in terms of surface things. There's flashy cars and flashy lights in the way that many things are made. You can tell the difference between things that are made in the 90s and things that are made in the 60s by the way that they're designed. Functionally, they may function the same, but looks-wise. And I have seen, and I myself have decided to buy one object over another because of the way it looks. What is curious to me is how in Genesis 31, verse 19, there's the story of Jacob deciding to take his wives and split. And as he's packing up to go and to slip out in the night, it tells us there in verse 19 that Rachel stole the family household idols. Now I ask the question, why is this in the story? Why does Genesis include this in the story? Here is this beautiful woman, and she's the one who steals the household idols. Are we to view Rachel's actions as revealing a weakness of character? Are we to view Rachel's actions as indicating that moral and spiritual things were not that important to her? Is it possible that with all her beauty, that she was an airhead? Is it possible that in spite of all her beauty and how attractive that she was not very deep or very spiritual, that she was one of those proverbial dumb blondes? Is it possible that plain old Coke bottle glass lens Leah had a better nature, had more substance? Don't we so often look on the surface and overlook the things that really count? Is it possible, as I've already asked, is it possible that Jacob was so enamored with Rachel's physical presence that he never got serious about her character and what God wanted him to do with respect to that? And so that brings me to the third area, the third thing that can cause us to be vulnerable and blind and can cause us at times to wake up to reality and be so sorry when it happens. And that is that our own ideas and our own plans are often more in focus than God's ideas and God's way. You know how those TV producers or movie producers with their cameras, they can focus in on a person's face. And when they focus in on one particular person's face, everybody else around goes out of focus. Now they can take a shot where everybody is in focus, but they can focus in on one person very tightly, and in doing so, everybody around goes out of focus. Then they can shift from one character to the other character, and as they focus in on this one, you can watch the other one go out of focus. Those of you that have trifocals can understand a little bit what we're talking about. You can look, everything looks clear in this way, but then if you look this way and then down, it gets confusing. Proverbs tells us that there is a way that seems right to a man, but the ends thereof are the ways of death. Jacob or Proverbs is talking about self-made plans, what looks good to us, the course that we've outlined for our lives, our plan for the future. And I want us to see how Genesis gives us this picture that Jacob had his own ideas and he thought he knew where he should be going. Look with me in verse 10, chapter 29. Verse 10 of chapter 29 says, Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother. Now, what I want us to notice is that Jacob was like most young men. First, he sees the girl. Then, he sees the car she's driving. And he begins putting two and two together. I can almost imagine Jacob thinking to himself, this is going to go fine for me around here at Laban's place. There's gorgeous Rachel, and there's all these sheep. Beautiful women and lots of money. This isn't a bad place to be at all. I'll make a go of it for sure here. Maybe it wasn't so bad that I had to leave mom and dad. You can just begin to see the machinery rolling in his mind. I'm going to make a go for it. This is going to be a sweet experience here. But, Jacob's self-made plans begin to unravel. He experiences two major reversals in this story. The first, he's got his heart set on Rachel, and he's going to marry Rachel, but he is tricked. He winds up marrying Leah. Devastating. But you know what? He decides in his mind that he's going to go for this anyway, and he's going to go another 7 years for Rachel. And so he enters into bigamy, and he enters into a kind of a relationship that the scriptures later condemn, and that is that no man should marry sisters. So he goes ahead with his ideas, does it his way in order to get his plan, and so he goes for the second goal. Once he does finally get Rachel, he goes for the second goal, and that is to build up a family through Rachel. But you know what happens? The Bible tells us that Rachel was barren. But Leah was fruitful. Very fruitful. And so Jacob's schemes, which had brought him fortune so far, were now beginning to crumble. It's at first surprising to read that Rachel was going to have problems having a child. Because, you know, just a few years earlier, and we studied it last Sabbath, Jacob sees this ladder from heaven, and God comes to him, and God says, Jacob, I'm going to make your seed as numerous as the sands of the sea. And now, his chosen, his intended wife cannot have kids. And he goes back and he begins blaming it on God, because you read it there in verse 2 of chapter 30. Rachel comes to him and she says, give me a child or I'm going to die. And Jacob says, well, who am I? Am I God? Who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb? So Jacob begins to understand that God has a hand in this. And the twist in the story, this is what I want us to see. The twist in the story is Scripture's way of showing that Jacob's plans have come to naught. What Jacob had in mind, what Jacob had in focus, was not necessarily what God had in mind and what God would have had him focused. Jacob had planned to take Rachel as his wife, but one gets the impression that God had intended Jacob to marry Leah. Both these women produced some incredible sons. Out of the 12, there's Judah and there's Joseph. Leah produces Judah. Rachel produces Joseph. Both of them stand out in a marked way. Both of them are used by God to do some incredible things for his purposes. But in the end, it is Leah's son, Judah, who takes preeminence and is the one through whom the Messiah ultimately comes. He is the one through whom the family of Abraham continues. Counter to Jacob's plan, God had opened the womb of Leah and not Rachel. God had withheld sons from Rachel so that the seed of Abraham would be built from Leah. Like I said, one almost gets the impression that God had intended Jacob to marry Leah, but Jacob wanted Rachel. How are we to deal with this? How are we to read all this except to sense that maybe Jacob was running ahead of God? Trying to secure the blessing on his own, trying to find the good life in his own way, assuming that God was along for the ride. Assuming that God would bless him like God said. Without seriously attempting to discover what God's will was on the matter, and what God's timing might have been as well. You know, when I read this story, I say to myself, we do so much off the cuff. There is so much pain in our families, so much sorrow in our lives, because we have done things casually and off the cuff. We have not seriously sought God's guidance and God's way in things. So Jacob wakes up to reality. His heart has led him down a blind alley. He is blinded by love and feelings. He is blinded by outward appearances. And he is blinded by his own ideas and his own plans. And where is God in all of this? We find him steadily working out his will in spite of human blindness. The ladder that we spoke about so eloquently last week, so incredible, this beautiful picture that in spite of family failure, in spite of family dysfunction, in spite of our guilt, in spite of our loss of self-worth because of the blowouts we've had in family, and we're on the run in spite of that, there's the awesome, incredible truth that God is there. God is with us in spite of our failures. That ladder that connects heaven and earth is there. We rejoiced in that truth last Sabbath. The ladder was there all the time, but Jacob was too busy climbing the marriage ladder that he didn't take time to climb the ladder that God had provided. And so, in closing, my mind says we need to lean more on God and less on our own understanding. We need to look deeper than we so often do. We need to look beyond the surface things. And we need to let principle guide us rather than our feelings and our love and our passion and our drives. We need to ask ourselves some questions. Am I really seeing what I think I'm seeing? We need to ask ourselves, how much do feelings or desire determine the direction of my life? What have I been focusing on? Have I been focused on externals, on the surface, on things, on my own plans? Am I yielded to God's way? Do I see God? Have I seen God? Yes, we all wake up to reality. We've all been blinded in some respect in our lives. But I hold out to you again today that ladder connecting heaven and earth, you will see heaven opened and angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man. None of us need to be blind. None of us need to plunge headlong into any failure or mistakes. again. And certainly that ladder that connects heaven and earth promises us that in the failures that we've already made, there is forgiveness and power to live in spite of the brokenness that we ourselves have created. Amen. So I hold that out to you. And as we sing our closing song today, may our hearts go out in firm belief that when we trust in Jehovah, there is guidance and there is perfect peace.
You have been listening to another special American Christian Ministries presentation. International copyright, all rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americanchristianministry.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There's no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries have been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He is coming soon.